Air Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Well, happy Friday, everybody. Ken Foyle's just shock. Clare Derrick in the shock to the shop. Yeah, between now and three, Hannah Kelly and yours truly. With some interesting topics and some nice music for you as well. What will we be talking about? Well, Hossie Mella Cooper, Focal Gaeilge and Shane Nictusa Clare. And we're going to be discussing the situation where state bodies from now on will have to use the fada in a person's name. Now, you might think, what? What do you mean use a fada? What difference does it make? Well, it'll make a lot of difference, as we'll hear in a couple of moments from the Secretary General of Conaill na Gaeilge on Rúnaí Ginearálta and Sin Julian de Spáin. Also, the many ways you might get some money back from the revenue. Oh, don't we love that? Because we don't get too many opportunities to get money back from the revenue while they pick our pockets all year round. We'll return to that item that we intended doing yesterday. Could Botox and filler affect the skin health long term? And new car registrations in October are down 16.8%. I wonder why. Deputy Director General of SIMI, the Society of the Motor Industry, Tom Cullen, will join us. As ever, we'd like to hear your views. 0833 97 97 97. That'll WhatsApp or you can text us or WhatsApp us on that in regards to that. Now, also, we have a couple of other items. By the way, quite a lot of drivers have been caught speeding over the bank holiday weekend. In their over 1,000, in fact, despite all the warnings that were there. And we might have some time permitting top tips for you to secure your property against burglaries during the dark winter's month. So, keep your messages coming, 0833 97 97 97. We'd love to hear from you. You can also maybe speak to Hannah later on 045 901 490. But let's begin anyway. And I mentioned the whole area of the old Sheena Fada. Remember that Nuravimur Galera skull? Well, you might have said and you might have heard on Munto Regra, where's the Fada? Dog tone fada or lore, and you'd be saying, look, what's a fada got to do with it? But you might be surprised to know that the fada is as important and even more important than individual letters, because inserting it or omitting it can change entirely the meaning of a word, and it can lead to some very strange things indeed. State bodies from now on must use the fada in a person's name from yesterday onwards. Previously, the Sheena fada on a person's name could be dropped at the discretion of any public company. I didn't know that, as my friend Michael Kane might say. Not a lot of people know that. He does it a lot better than I do, I have to say. But I was also equally shocked to find out that one of our main transport companies, i.e. Aer Lingus, is not obliged to use fadas. In fact, won't accept a fada on your name. So if your name is Sean, they won't accept you registering or booking S-E-R fada N. They'll insist on S-E-R-N. And the difference between the two words is Sean is an Gaeilge de John, although that's kind of an anglicisation version of it, whereas S-E-R-N without the fada means you're old. So let's hear more anyway. Julian the Spawn, Rúnaí Ginearálta, Conaill na Gaeilge, Kate Foyle, Siach.
You're Margaret Clem, that's my lad.
Now, I don't know if you were as surprised as I am about this whole area of the Sheena fada, that it's bad enough that private companies, as Aer Lingus is now privatised, someone told me yesterday, much to my surprise, they won't accept Sheena fada on names. I don't know why. I don't know of any language where that would happen, other than an Gaeilge. But I'm quite astounded that public bodies until yesterday would not have been required to use Sheena fadas.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I suppose over the years it's always been there that you weren't entitled to have your Sheena fada in your name or in your address. And it's something that we're hopefully going to see change happen to this over the coming years for state services. Because as you point out, Aer Lingus and the banks and any private group providing services don't have to, they're not required by the new law to provide that you can add the Sheena Fada if you want. And as you mentioned, Sean, without the Sheena Fada, you could also go for Shane S.E. Fada as well. And, you know, so you're getting the, is it Shane, is it Sean, or are you old with Shan? So, you know, there's a lot, the Fada is very important and it does make a difference.
Well, I can think of multiple words. Another word that springs to mind is the word fear, which is the Irish for man. If you put a Sheena Fada on that, it becomes grass. Or conversely, if you're using the word fair as grass and you leave out the Sheena Fada, it becomes man. So it renders the sentence absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, you're right there. And even if you think about the word era, you know, if you don't put the Sheena Fada in on era, it actually means burden. The translation of era without a Sheena Fada.
It means what? So, what does it mean?
A burden.
You
know, a burden. So, you know, when you look at the air code, for example, they don't use the Sheena Fada. So you could say it's a burdensome code that they provide to us.
Well, you're dead right there. It is a bloody burdensome code anyway, in regards. The one that really surprised me yesterday, because I never had never known this, is the beautiful, beautiful name Orla. Now, the name Orla, which, you know, the spelling of it is, tends to be murdered in modern terms, because in its original form would be O for the R, F-H-L-A-I-T-H, Orla, which means the golden-haired princess. Oh, what a beautiful name.
Gorgeous, yeah.
It has been shortened to Orla, O for the R-L-A, but if you leave out the Fada, it's the horrific word, it becomes vomit.
Yeah.
Osgwelga.
Yeah.
But how can we have a scenario where our native language, with equal status with English and everything else, even in the European Union now, that our national, our state bodies and semi-state bodies have been in a scenario where they haven't been using the Fada? And should there be no choice in this anyway, whether you're private or public?
Well, we'd agree that they all should be required to allow a person to use Sheena Fada if they want to use the Sheena Fada. But it's something, I suppose it was, you know, when computer systems were put in and when they started, you know, people were able to insert their details. They probably put in the system and never thought about the Irish. And as you say, that wouldn't happen in another country. You know, you wouldn't that wouldn't happen in France, for example. You know, they'd have the accent that would be included because it's very important. Whereas in Ireland, we tend to maybe say we don't want to see too much trouble. You know, Sheena Fada might be just a bit too much trouble. Instead of actually saying, well, actually, there's a lot of people out there that would actually, use the Sheena Fada. It's part of their identity. It's part of who they are, and it should be included from the off.
Well, the fact of the matter is the Sheena Fada is absolutely crucially important, because without it, it changes not alone the meaning of the word, it also changes the pronunciation of the word.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, for sure. And then what's actually been passed now as well, like they've made this as part of the new law that came in 2 years ago. But what's going to happen now is that the Department of Graft is going to give direction to the different government bodies, and gradually they'll start including the Sheena Fada. So it's not going to happen overnight, but it's something that will take a bit of time. But it will happen, but it's just going to take a bit of time before we'll actually be able to use the Sheena Fada.
Well, I resent the situation greatly, and even though, you know, as listeners know, I have a great growth on Gaeilge, because I was educated entirely through Gaeilge from the time I was knee-high to a grasshopper, and I use it at every opportunity and that. And let's credit Sinn Féin TD Angus O'Snoddy, because he said that his party had fought long and hard for this particular reform. And they had difficulties. From our own perspective here, let me say this, and I don't require you to comment on it, you'll know why. We contacted on Commissioner Tionga yesterday, in other words, the language commissioner, and we said, listen, would you care to comment on this situation? No comment. Mm. Now, I would ask the question, and I'm not asking you again for a comment, Julian. I would ask the question, why, if we have a Commissioner Tionga, whose remit is to oversee the use of the Gaeilge by public bodies and ourselves and everyone else and things like that, and we asked him about this situation, and we get a stark no comment. I find that quite remarkable altogether. And I'm sure every listener and every television viewer will be quite bemused lately at what, would you guess, Julian?
At what?
The number of ads that have suddenly started airing on Scoilge in Irish. Now, that's to do with what was the regulator for broadcasting, which was the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland. It's now Comisión na Mban.
Yeah.
And I might give some credit, although I'm open to correction here, the former Commissioner na Teanga, whom I interviewed in the past, Ronan O'Donnell, is now one of the senior officials of the new Comisión na Mban. And I know he was a great advocate of Gaeilge. And that's why, because some people have been asking us, why have you suddenly got all these ads on Gaeilge on and on the television?
Well, what actually happened with the advertising was it was a proposal that Conor na Gaeilge put forward when the legislation was going through the Dáil 2 years ago. And basically what it is, it's 20% of advertising. One in five ads now has to be in Irish from any state company. And 5% of their advertising they do in Irish language media as well. So it was a sort of a, something that would promote the language more. You'd hear the language more, see the language more, but it wouldn't cost anything extra because they're spending the money anyway.
That's right.
So why not have it at Oscoig as well?
Yeah, I see in the presser that Agus Snuddy released, he actually compliments on Commissioner Teanga, the language commissioner, as saying that he fought with Éireann, that the Commissioner Teanga fought with Éireann Róid Éireann for many years to try and get them to accept the use of FODAS. So Éireann Róid Éireann weren't doing it either. But strange, no. I just found it strange yesterday that they didn't even wish to offer a view.
Well, not knowing exactly why they can't comment on it at the moment, but I don't think the new Commissioner Chang has actually been appointed officially yet. It has gone through the Senate and the Dáil, but I think the President then has to sign off on it, you know, and give the actual seal of office to the new language commissioner. So maybe that might be the reason, but I'm not sure. You know?
Well, there's a lovely colour photo of a guy who's a name I won't mention here because of what you just said, but there's a lovely colour photo of a guy sitting in his office, and he's named as Commissioner Teanga on their website, and also a whole raft of other people who have all sorts of different jobs to promote the language. And of course, one of my pet hates is people calling it Éireann Róid Éireann, and that was because the father wasn't there, Éireann Róid. Just before I let you go, Julian, there is another aspect to this whole trivialisation or secondarisation, if I might coin a word there, of the Irish language. It's the appalling mistakes on road signs all over the country.
Yeah, and actually that's something for the Commissioner Teanga now. If you see any road sign that's not spelled correctly or if the translation is not correct, you can get in touch with the Language Commissioner's office and they'll actually look into that and get in touch with the relevant authorities and get that sorted. So there is a way to address that now, which is good because it wasn't there in the past, but it is there now.
And it's not just Irish language versions. You also see it in the English language versions with extra letters and less letters. So, Sala Creek Lomay Dunshaw, can we start this Nagail if we lower the Hurum Fane?
Toshigama, Savalik will spacey teeny to Changa, Kintu, which is Sinn Féin, but at the same time, we've got a lot of challenges, especially in education. If you look at the Minister for Education has reduced the teaching of Irish in primary schools by half an hour from first class to sixth class. That's going to come in the near future. So there's different things that we have to challenge and we have to address, but I think in general, the interest in language is growing, and I think people are. You know, as the world's become a smaller place because of travel and internet and everything else, I think people are looking at the language as what helps identify them, you know, as Irish. I'm not saying you have to have Irish, but I think more and more people are actually using Irish in that sense.
Yeah, we should be proud of what sets us out apart. It's our own, it's our native language, and everybody has the cúpla focal in them, so one who's not the quid cúpla focal, you know. And just before I go, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know how to insert a Sheena Fada on their computer, on their keyboard, because I often get asked that, even by some staff in here, how do you put a Sheena Fada in? You hold down the Alt-GR button and then press the letter.
That's it.
And that will put the Sheena Fada on. So how about that?
As long as you have the Irish keyboard, and you know when you're setting up your computer, ask you what keyboard or what area you're in. And if you have Ireland in and the Irish keyboard, then that's the Alt gradient button.
And it doesn't have to be Irish language, by the way, just English language keyboard, but Ireland being the country of whatever. But just Alt-GR, everyone has that button. It's just to the right of the space bar. Yeah. And if you hit that one and the letter that you're looking for simultaneously, the Sheena Fada goes in, because it changes. I'm sure I'll think of many, many more words that if you don't put in the Fada, it not alone changes the pronunciation, it changes the meaning of the word, which is terrible. Look, Lana Raggy, Trawa, Leshin, Sora, Toshula, Griv, Ekar, and Quail, Conkeen, and Shinny, Cunnan, and Gail, Gail, and the Spawn, Gorimina Malgota, Sockfelling, New Vera Glor, and Shar, Kildare Focus, or KFM, Glor Kildara, Secretary General of Cunnan, and Gail, Julian, the Spawn, Gorimina Malgota, Julian.
Gorimina Malgota, Clem.
Slán Tamil.
Slánish.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Okay, welcome back and happy Friday. Before we tell you about the good news of how you can get money back from the taxman, sad to see that a date has been set for the trial of former Kilkenny hurling all-star DJ Carey. He's facing 21 fraud and forgery charges. Interestingly, the 52-year-old's address in the news report is the Drive, Newtown, Maynooth. Although I didn't know that. He made a brief appearance, I understand, at Dublin Circuit Criminal Court this morning. Now, he denies all charges against him, including 19 counts that he dishonestly induced people to pay him money after he fraudulently claimed to have cancer and needed finances for treatment. So sad, of course, the way what's befallen that family, because his sister, Katrina, is facing a whole raft of charges as well. And those cases are still before court. I'm not going to offer any comment on them. But DJ Carey, holder of 6 All-Ireland medals, Hurler of the Year, Captain Kilkenny to win the McCarthy Cup in 2003. I interviewed him many times when I was working weekends with RT Sport and that. Many times I walked Croke Park with him. He was a lovely guy. And it's so sad to see what has happened. But of course, if he is found guilty of what happened, it means that a lot of people lost a lot of money. Likewise, if his sister's found ultimately guilty of it as well, the same thing would apply. Now let's turn then to a happier note in regards to things, and we're talking tax, and taxpayers are being urged to seek refunds they're owed from the revenue, because it seems thousands of people have overpaid tax. New figures indicate as many as 317,000 people have gave the revenue too much money last year. Are you mad, lads? It comes on top of almost 260,000 PAYE earners who overpaid tax the previous year. The deadline for submitting your tax return, by the way, is imminent. Thursday, November 15th. You've only about 10 days left, folks. 12 days, maybe. Recent figures from the revenue show the majority of those who overpaid tax and filed a return, they're owed about 700 quid. Now, there are many ways you can get the tax back in that. Many people, maybe, and worse still, you might owe the revenue tax. Most, apparently, 161,000 people have underpaid what they owed, average figure of 500. You need to know that if you underpay the revenue, they hit you for a whole raft of things. What you owe them, interest and penalties, and you could end up double or treble what you underpay them in the end, having to fork out. Anyway, let's find out more about that, because there are many ways you can get money back from revenue. And the woman behind me here, Hannah Kelly. Good afternoon again, Hannah.
Oh, back again.
Back again, indeed. Yeah. I know, like a bad penny. No, I'm only joking you.
No, I have some good news.
You have some good news. Yeah. Tell us about medical expenses relief.
Yeah, so if you have paid for eligible health expenses, you are entitled to claim relief at your standard rate of tax of 20%. So day-to-day medical expenses, such as GP visits and prescription fees, are often a tax relief on the cost of their medical expenses.
So medical expenses relief, day-to-day medical expenses such as GP visits and prescription fees are often overlooked but can add up to a substantial amount over the course of a year. So let's go then with expenses. If we have expenses, what kind of relief we can get for those?
So for flat rate expenses relief. So this is a type of tax relief for PAYE workers in specific trades and professions where a person can reduce the amount of taxable income they have each year on the cost of certain expenses. So these are commonly known as uniform allowance. So the amount can be claimed depends on the job, because the rates are set by revenue each year for various classes of employee. A full list of jobs and associated reliefs can be found online at revenue.ie.
And I should tell people, by the way, it's not enormous. I've seen seen some of these so-called uniform reliefs that might be worth 30 or 40 quid. But nevertheless, everything adds up when you put medical expenses. That's certainly very important. Very, very important. Yeah. Only 40% of people are claiming their medical expenses.
Yeah.
The flat rate expenses. Now, in the modern world of all things electronic and working from home and remote working, there's also money you can claim back if you are working from home.
Yeah, so this is known as e-worker relief. So if a person works from home, they can apply for tax relief on the cost of utilities and other expenditures that might be incurred over their working year. So an employer can make a voluntary payment to an employee of $320 per workday without deducting any PAYE, PRSI or universal social charge. So this payment is intended to cover expenses such as heating and electricity costs. And there's no obligation on the employer to make this payment, and many employers are not in a financial position to provide their employees with this relief.
And now, so the key thing is, if your employer pays you the 320 a day for every day you work at home, you cannot claim back from the revenue.
Yeah.
But if you're not paid the 320 a day, the revenue will give you a 320 tax relief for every day. So say, for example, you're on the 40%. You'll get half that for every day you work at home back into your pocket. Ah, the good old bike. The cycle to work scheme.
Yeah, the famous cycle to work scheme. So this was recently increased from €1,000 to €1,250 and is €1,500 for electric bikes. So taxpayers can avail of the exemption once in any four-year period.
Right. Now, and they're quite strict on that. Now, no good saying, you know, you bought a bike and you live in another county and you cycle to work from Laois into Kildare or, you know, Carlow or whatever else. You'd want to be able to show the revenue. But I think the figures are quite generous. If you paid up to €1,000 for a really fancy bike, you know, you could get half of that back in tax. So it makes it, it's very efficient, and a lot of people don't claim it. Home carer tax credit.
Yeah, so this can be claimed by a partner staying at home and caring for their children. So the value of the credit for 2020 and 2021 is €1,600. And it can be claimed either if the spouse is at home full time or if the spouse works part time and earns less than €10,400. But that is if they earn between €7,200 and €10,400, they will get a portion of the tax credit. So the rent tax relief is worth up to €500 a year and up to €1,000 a year for married couples and civil partners.
Right, so you want to claim that. Now, I know there are tuition fees as well, which you can claim. And there's nursing home relief as well.
Yeah, so anyone paying nursing home fees, either for themselves or for someone else, is eligible to claim relief at their marginal rate of tax. So a person can claim up to 40% relief on nursing home or home care costs, up to a maximum of €75,000.
So if you're forking out, lads, for, and you're not covered by the Fair Deal scheme or whatever else, if you're forking out of your pocket, you could be claiming thousands back for the care. Now, there's a rent-a-room relief as well, but that doesn't apply to Airbnb. You're allowed to earn up to €14,000 a year by renting out a room from your sole or main residence. So, Hannah, you're not looking to rent a room for me, are you?
No.
I'll tell you, I'll charge you €13,999. And then you get tax relief on that. You're not taxed on that income.
No.
So it's worth considering, given the... Now, it's another thing, of course, if you want to have a stranger coming into your house,
using
one of the rooms. There's also a rent tax credit. If you are renting, now many people are, so give us some details.
So the rent tax relief is worth up to €500 a year and up to €1,000 a year for married couples and civil partners. So it's been introduced to help ease the pressure of record highs in the cost of accommodation. And for 2024 and 2025, the credit will increase to €750 for an individual and €1,500 for a couple. And around 400,000 people are eligible for the credit. And what you have to do to claim it is to sign into my account on the revenue website, go to the PAYE services section.
Okay, and finally, the incapacitated child tax credit, which is available to the parent of a child who is permanently incapacitated and where there is a reasonable expectation that the child will be unable to maintain themselves when over 18. What's that worth, Hannah?
So this is a very valuable credit, currently set at €3,300, but it is increasing to €3,500 in 2024. So many who receive a diagnosis of autism for their child but do not know they are eligible for this credit and can claim it retrospectively for the past 4 years or the year of birth of their child, whichever is the most recent.
There you have it, folks. Consult your local accountant, or indeed, if you're just PAYE and you do your own returns and that, go on to the revenue.ie website. But there are many, many allowances which you can claim, but you have only until November 15th to get it in for this year. I should say that in many cases, you can claim back costs overpaid or whatever, or allowances that you were entitled to for a 4 year period. After that, it's gone. And of course, the other way that you get a big tax relief on, if you're paying private health insurance, that also is costed on the basis of whatever tax rate you're on, whether it's 20%, 40%, that's knocked off the overall cost of what it might be. Thank you indeed, Hannah Kelly, for that.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan.
Welcome back then. A listener says, Clem, now might be a good time to remind listeners that Revenue will not text you to tell you you're entitled to a refund. These scam texts are rampant this time of year. I have received two from different numbers already this morning. Thanks for that, indeed. And a reminder to listeners, you can get in touch with us by text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97. You can call us and speak with Hannah on 0459 01490 or email studio at kfmradio.com. And that listener, that's a very timely reminder. Thank you. If you owe the Revenue money, they will certainly call you. But if you, they will not be calling you to say they owe you money. So if you get any text that purports to be from the Revenue saying we're giving you back money, you can go off to Bali for a month or whatever else, they're scam texts. Do not click on them to check them out or anything like that. Just ignore them. And if you get any ever messages from your bank purporting to be from your bank, don't click on it. Ring your bank independently and ask, did you send me a message? People are being bled by hundreds of thousands and even millions by succumbing to these particular scams and things like that. Okay, Botox and filler, could they affect your skin health long term? Well, let's find out, because Botox and fillers are among the most popular injectables for unwanted skin sagging and aging. But what does it all mean for your health long term? Indeed, let's find out from an expert now, because he's medical director and co-founder of the Sisu Clinic here in Naas, Dr. James Cotter. Good morning, James. Good afternoon, James,
Good morning, Clem. Thanks for having me on.
No, you're very welcome. Now, to be honest with you, I've seen pictures of this stuff being done and everything else like that, because business is booming for those offering non-surgical aesthetic treatments. First of all, just let's discuss the idea of what exactly is Botox, and is there a difference with that and other so-called fillers?
Yeah, so I suppose it's important to make the distinction between the two. Botox is a drug, botulinum neurotoxin type A, and it's a muscle relaxant. And typically it's used to treat fine lines and wrinkles in the upper part of the face, so from the eyes up to the hairline. And it does this by relaxing the muscles beneath the skin, and that results in a reduction in the horizontal lines and the lower and upper forehead and the so-called crow's feet lines around the eyes. Dermal fillers are a gel. They contain hyaluronic acid, which is one of the components that will make up the collagen in your skin and in your lips. Typically in Europe, or all the fillers that are licensed in Europe, contain hyaluronic acid that's made from a non-animal plant-based protein. And hyaluronic acid is used to replace volume loss in various ages, in various parts of the face that occurs as we age.
But none of this is permanent, is that correct?
Botox as a drug lasts for about 3 months, and a good quality dermal filler will last appropriately about 12 months.
Right, we're all accustomed to what we're seeing now, people with very swollen lips and things like that, and as I said yesterday, crudely and colloquially called the trout pout and stuff like that. And a real concern to reputable people like yourself, Dr. James Cotter, is I think this tendency There are people who are not medically qualified or they're not administering this stuff in this country.
Yeah, so the current state of things at the moment, Clem, is that in Ireland one has to be a doctor or a dentist to prescribe, because it is a prescription-only drug, Botox, botulinum neurotoxin type A, and to administer it. Around dermal fillers, there's no such legislation. Dermal fillers are classed as a medical device, and one would think that the operative word there is medical, but it's not. They're not a prescription item, and as such, anybody can buy them off the internet and can legally administer them. So, Clem, if you were so inclined, you could start doing dermal filler treatments tomorrow yourself.
On myself or by somebody who's not qualified?
You could buy a dermal filler tomorrow and you could decide you're going to set up your own dermal filler business. The dermal fillers really are that unregulated.
And are people then not taking a terrible chance? Because I know there's a series on television about two plastic surgeons, if I give them the correct term, they're Americans. And it's something called botched jobs or whatever else in regards.
Yeah.
Now, I often wonder about these two guys because they, and I wonder, is it more about profit or the patient welfare? Because ultimately, while they're correcting jobs that have been botched, they are still allowing people to have the type of implants and stuff pumped into them that just don't look normal. So in this country, I could walk into anybody. And I've heard stories about this stuff being administered by, I'm not going to label any particular profession, in fairness.
Yeah.
But are you not...
Non-medically qualified people.
Non-medically qualified people. Are you not ultimately, potentially, taking your life in your hands?
Yeah, I think so. And the ironic thing is, between the two treatments, Botox and dermal fillers, if you were to unregulate one of them and to allow anybody to do one of them, from a safety point of view, you'd be better off to allow anybody who is non-medically qualified to do Botox rather than dermal fillers, because Botox, even if you botch it, to use your word, will wear off after 3 months.
Okay.
And you can go back to normal, okay? But with a dermal filler, it's different. With a dermal filler, you can get a soft tissue infection that can take weeks, if not months, to resolve with antibiotics and could leave you with a permanent deficit in your tissue, or in the most serious case, if a dermal filler was injected into an artery, it could result in necrosis or tissue death, or in some cases, blindness. So when you think about the two treatments, between Botox, which is appropriately licensed only for medically qualified people, and dermal fillers, which anybody under the current legislation can do, dermal fillers have the potential to do much more harm.
Right, so, and by the way, there is an element of this, Dr. Cotter, is there not, that when properly administered by qualified medical practitioners like yourself, that it's not alone the vanity project of easing the wrinkles. This can also be helpful, am I correct in saying, that in alleviating the really bad effects of a scar?
Yeah, I mean, potentially, certainly with dermal fillers, if an appropriate amount of time has passed from the initial injury that caused the scar, so typically that's a minimum of 6 months, because tissue remodeling occurs for up to 6 months, and maybe even longer than that, you'd leave it. But a dermal filler, when administered, could be used to reduce the appearance of a scar or improve it. And we do see a percentage of that in patients that come in to see us, albeit a small percentage. It's there, you know.
Right. You give me a kind of demographic in terms. I see where you're quoted as saying that twice a week, on average, your clinic is contacted by young women looking to have problems rectified following botched treatment by non-medics.
Yeah, that's correct. So we have 16 clinics in the Republic of Ireland. We have one clinic in Belfast. We have three in London and we have six in the US. And if I just take the 17 clinics on the island of Ireland, I would suppose it's probably about in the order of 1 to 2 people per week contact us. And, you know, it ranges from they've had a less than satisfactory cosmesis, so lumps or bumps because the filler was administered by somebody who wasn't appropriately trained or wasn't experienced enough, or both, to more serious problems such as an infection, or a bit rarer again, they'll come in because it's been injected into a blood vessel and it's constricted the blood flow to different areas.
And what about this trend that's, you certainly see it in dentistry, but I think there's a growing trend now for people to go abroad. Surely that's even multiple times riskier.
One doesn't tend to see it for non-surgical aesthetic treatments, so I think it's important not to conflate the two. You know, Botox and dermal fillers are non-surgical, minimally invasive treatments. It doesn't mean that there isn't a potential to do maximum harm, particularly with a filler. I think the other trend you're seeing is, you're right, where people are travelling abroad to places like Turkey to have surgical procedures such as breast augmentation or tummy tucks or weight loss surgery done. But I think the same principle applies, is that, you know, when somebody goes there, you don't really have a frame of reference in terms of assessing the level of qualification of the person or the standards to which they're held. And perhaps there is a parallel when somebody gets a dermal filler in Ireland with a non-medically qualified person, that, you know, they're really rolling the dice.
If, having said what you've said then, that there's always a risk of infection, that what are called vascular occlusions can occur, that in certain areas you can have catastrophic consequences, including even blindness and all the other conditions you've outlined.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm asking the obvious question here now, that you would counsel that nobody should undertake any of these particular procedures without what is called informed consent from a properly qualified medical professional.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's a risk of infection in any treatment that breaches the integrity of the skin. But there's an incident rate of about 1 in 200 and that. Even if the treatment is performed correctly, you know, there are other external factors such as the patient's behaviour and skincare after the treatment as well. With vascular occlusion, that can happen to even an experienced medically qualified practitioner. You know, there's a statistical risk of that as well. But I think that increases exponentially when the person administering the treatment isn't medically qualified and has no appropriate knowledge of the anatomy involved.
Indeed. You've heard it, folks. So to refer, you draw your own conclusions and you make your own decisions. And remember, you potentially risk your life. Medical director and co-founder of the Sisu Clinic in Ace. That's spelled S-I-S-U. Dr. James Cotter. James, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
And thank you for having me, Clint.
You're more than welcome indeed, by way of we getting out that valuable information to listeners to be very, very careful in regards to that, because it's often presented as, here's a little jab here and jab there. And there are people, I won't tag the professions, but there have been multiple reports of people who are not at all eminently qualified in any medical way whatsoever. Now, would you allow someone to inject Botox or dermal filler into you who is not qualified to give injections in the first place, not alone to be putting this stuff into you? Anyway, thanks to Dr. James Cotter, Medical Director and Co-Founder of the Sisu, S-I-S-U Clinic. They're based in Nice. You'll find them online if you go looking for them there. Thank you indeed, James. I see some news just breaking, by the way, that there's one dead after what's been described as a horror crash between a motorcycle and a van in Wicklow. Oh, more sad news. We'll see what we can do in regards to finding more about that as well. And if you'd like to offer any opinions on what you just heard there in regards to Dr. Cotter and that, please get in touch with us in regards to that. And thanks indeed for the earlier message on the text. How can it be good for anyone, says a listener. If I could get that message out of my way now, I might be able to read what's coming in. I'll look at that in a couple of seconds time, because I want to go to the latest motoring figures that have emerged for the from SIMI, the Society of the Irish Motor Industry, in regards to how new cars are doing. I was quite struck about it yesterday, by the way, most notably by the headline that October new car registrations are down by 16.8%. I wonder why. Is that a trend or is it just a once-off? Deputy Director General of SIMI is Tom Cullen. Good afternoon, Tom. Thank you indeed for coming on the programme. Just taking that headline figure for a start, Tom, what do you make of it?
Yeah, it's okay. It's not creating a trend. Since COVID, we've been trying to catch up with 2019, and we're sort of back into that type of territory now. We have big issues, obviously, with supply. It was a sort of a unique set of trading circumstances where we had a lot of people who had saved money during COVID, were prepared to buy cars, and we couldn't get them for them. So, but that's starting to iron itself out now. So this year is going to be slightly up. It's going to be a good bit up on last year. Last year, 105,000 new vehicles sold. We'll sell 122,000 new vehicles this year. Caveat that by saying we're really, with the economy at the level it's at the moment, the industry should be doing about 150,000 new cars. So while that doesn't help our members, it also means that, you know, the car park is getting older. So, but on the positive side, 22,000 electric vehicles sold this year, 45% up on last year. And that whole electric hybrid, plug-in hybrid, yeah, is now taking about 45% of new car sales. So that's a positive.
Can
a
we
positive
focus on that whole electric vehicles? Because many people will be interested in that. In 2023 versus 2022, the figures there, I'm looking at new electric vehicle sales total the year to date for 2023. 22,280 electric vehicles so far, compared with 15,200 last year. An increase, Tom, of 46%.
Yeah, so I suppose, yeah, again, I mentioned the word caveat, and I'll caveat this again. You know, we now have an electric vehicle market that it's around 3% of the overall fleet. We have about 2.3 million cars, and we have 100,000 electric vehicles sold now. So the incremental sales are very, very positive, but they're coming from a low base and still at a very low base. So, you know, the key area for development for us now is the used EV market, because with the best one in the world, it's, you know, not many people can afford to buy a new car, and everybody can afford to buy some type of second-hand, well, most can afford to buy some type of second-hand car, and we don't have that many second-hand EVs. So it is a good news story. The numbers are going in the right direction. I think in the budget this year was very important that the industry grants were not touched. That was a sensible thing to do. You know, what we need as an industry, like most sectors, is you need certainty, and the budget gave us certainty so that those figures will continue to grow. So we'd see a good growth in electric vehicle sales next year and a good growth in the new car sales figure next year, but still way back from where it should be. But yes, still continuous growth.
Is there a sense of where people might be suspending a decision on the basis of these electric cars will get a lot more efficient compared with what we had 5 years ago with massive batteries and things like that? We have the hybrids, we have the pure electric in that. But also, is the cost of an electric car, albeit notwithstanding grants available, is it prohibitive?
It's expensive. You know, there's no denying that. Electric vehicle technology is more expensive than internal combustion engine technology, and the price of a new car is going up. You know, it's going up every year. So we are, it is a privileged few who can afford to buy the latest technology, and you'd find that in the early parts, like any technology curve, and this is technology, we've an early adopter stage, and that early adopter stage now is probably reaching its sort of end, where we have people who could afford to buy a new electric car, who were interested in the technology, who were prepared to take a jump and a leap based on their education of what it was about. So we have a lot of those people in now. So that's why it's really the customer coming in now is going to be a lot more cautious about the decisions they make, hence the good reason why the grants, etc., were maintained. Really important to give confidence to the next group of people coming into the EV space that they're comfortable. And we do behavior and attitude surveys every year of consumers, and we find that people are very interested in getting an electric vehicle, but they want to see the infrastructure out there. They want to see motorways with fast charging. They want to know that, you know, even though they're particularly, like, say, somewhere like Kildare, you might have people commuting into Dublin, yeah, an electric vehicle will cover all their needs. But they do want to know if they travel anywhere to down the country that they're going to be covered too. And we're not at that stage yet where we have a very strong, evolved, robust, functional infrastructure. We need to get to that point to get the next group of confident buyers in.
All right, I'll let you go, Tom, and I'll run through some of the most popular models and that in just a moment or so. But that's Tom Cullen, Deputy Director General of SIMAI, the Society of the Irish Motor Industry, on that various data which you have presented, which is dated up to October of 2023. Tom, good talking to you. Thanks for joining us here on Kildare Focus this afternoon. And I'll have a quick look for you at just the most important, or the best, not the best, but five top top new car models for 2023. In first place, the Hyundai Tucson, or Hyundai as it's called in this country. Second, the Kia Sportage. Third, Toyota Corolla. Fourth, Toyota Yaris Cross 5. And fifth is the Volkswagen ID4. Then the top five selling new electric vehicles are EVs, car brands. Volkswagen is tops, followed by Tesla, Hyundai in third, Kia is fourth, and fifth is MG. The top five selling new electric vehicles in 2023 are, in first place, the Volkswagen ID4, in second, the Tesla Model Y. Third place is the Hyundai Ioniq 5. Fourth is the Skoda Enyaq. And fifth is the MG MG4. The top selling new car in October, surprisingly, the MG4. Oh, and market share by engine type. Petrol has 30% market share, diesel 22%, hybrid 18%, electric 18%, and plug-in hybrid 8%. And the market share by engine type, electric now has 27.8% to petrol's 23% and diesel's 20%. I'll tell you some Kildare focus, or figures, just very briefly after this.